Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the on-demand page and click Share This.
Welcome back to Issues Etc., the last half hour of the program today, this Wednesday afternoon, the 25th of November. We're going to spend with Dr. J.P. Moreland talking about naturalism, in particular, the failure of naturalism. What is naturalism, and does it even really get off the ground as a decent worldview, an explanatory hypothesis, as they say? Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Or talk back at issuesetc.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Dr. J.P. Moreland is a distinguished professor of philosophy at Talbot School of Theology at Biola University in La Mirada, California. He's author of the new book titled The Recalcitrant Imago Dei, Human Persons and the Failure of Naturalism. Dr. Moreland, welcome to Issues Etc.
Todd, it's great to be with you.
You state very early in the book that any decent worldview has to be able to explain what is. It can't explain it away or ignore what is. By that very simple criterion, does naturalism qualify as a decent worldview?
You know, I don't think so, Todd, because there are things about us as human beings that naturalism really has to explain away and can't really explain.
Such as?
Consciousness. You see, if you're a naturalist, you believe that the physical world is all there is, and in fact, the universe started as a physical universe, and matter is not conscious. And so all of a sudden, you have to try to explain how you can take brute, mindless matter and just rearrange it according to the laws of chemistry and physics, and all of a sudden, presto, you get consciousness or mind popping into existence. But the problem is, you can't get something from nothing, Todd, and you can't get mind from matter when matter doesn't have mind in it. So if naturalism were true, there shouldn't be any minds or consciousness. The believer in God doesn't have the problem, because the believer in God doesn't have to explain how you can get mind from nothing, because we start with mind. The fundamental being, in our view of the world, is himself a mind. And so we already begin the universe with consciousness, and we don't have to try to find some way to get it from nothing. Does that explain a little bit of what I mean?
Yeah. So how does the thoroughgoing naturalist, if there is such a thing, the consistent naturalist, how does he either attempt to explain or explain away something like consciousness?
There are two strategies. The first is to just deny that consciousness is really mental and to try to reduce it or identify it with just the brain. So the first attempt is to say, well, consciousness may seem to be mental from your first-person perspective, but it's really nothing but neurons firing in the brain. The problem with that is it doesn't work, because there are things that are true of consciousness that aren't true of the brain and vice versa. So they really can't be the same. That's the first attempt, and that's becoming increasingly difficult for naturalist scholars to sell in the public. The second strategy is just to use the word emergence, and that's to say that when matter reaches a certain stage of evolution, a new property emerges, and it's called consciousness. And so consciousness is just an emergent phenomenon when matter reaches a certain stage of complexity. The problem with that strategy is that emergence is just the name for the problem. It's not a solution. It's just like saying, how does a magician get a rabbit out of a hat? And the answer is, he gets a rabbit out of a hat. That's not a solution. It's the name for the problem. The simple truth is, then, that the believer in God says to the naturalist, explain to me where consciousness came from. And the naturalist says, well, consciousness either isn't real or it just came from nothing. And that's the answer to the question. But neither one of those solves the problem.
When you describe the kind of the nature of naturalism as a way of thinking of and looking at the world, you talk about a grand story, the narrative of naturalism. What is it, in essence?
We see a naturalist starts with the idea that the material world is all there is, and that science is our primary way of knowing reality. In fact, all other ways of knowing reality apart from the hard sciences aren't really legitimate. And so the naturalist tells a creation account of how everything got here. And he starts with tiny little particles or waves or whatever you want to call them down there. And the story that he or she tells is a story about how these tiny particles rearrange to form more and more complex objects and larger wholes, from molecules up to mountains and to planets and solar systems and galaxies. And so the creation story he tells, Todd, is a story about how these little subatomic particles just form together into more and more complex little chunks of matter. And that is the account of how everything whatsoever, including you and me, came into existence. The problem is that leaves out many things about us. I mentioned consciousness earlier. It also leaves out free will, because if you start with matter doesn't behave according to free will. Matter does what it does, entirely determined by the laws of nature. So it's not like a chunk of matter is free to do what it wants to do. It has to do what it does because of the laws of chemistry and physics. That means that if you were just your brain or your body, if you were just a material thing, then you'd have no free will. You would have to behave according to your environment and the laws of physics and chemistry. And I must tell you, Todd, more and more judges and more people in the judicial system are treating people as though they're not responsible for their behavior. And I think part of that has to do with the evolutionary naturalist perspective, because if evolutionary naturalism is true, we don't have free will, and so we're not responsible for what we do.
I want to deal with two aspects of what you just said. The first of all is it even coherent for a naturalist to talk about how one comes to know something? Knowledge. Knowledge seems to be something that they also cannot explain. I mean, knowledge is, they would say, well, I observe a certain thing occurring, and this registers with me somehow. I contemplate or reflect upon what I've seen, and they come up with ideas like natural laws and whatnot. But the real problem, I mean, it seems to me, for the naturalist, is knowledge itself.
Oh, I think you're so right. I think you're right on the money. Because an act of knowing something, like the act of knowing that my wife is in the other room, or an act of seeing the lamp, is not just an occasion where little BBs or little molecules and atoms are bumping into one another and causing things to happen in my brain. An act of knowing requires me to be a conscious and sentient. It requires my thought to be of something or about the object. It requires me to be capable of deliberating and following the laws of logic. But the laws of logic aren't the laws of chemistry and physics. The laws of logic govern mind. They don't govern matter, first and foremost. And so the real question is, how could there be such a thing as logic if there weren't an ultimate mind to ground it? How could there be reason? How could there be knowledge? Recently, a very well-known atheist, Anthony Flew, who is the leading atheist in the world for 50 years, became a believer in God. And one of the reasons he gives in his book was the very problem that you're putting your finger on, that if naturalism is true, all you have are brains interacting with the environment, and that's it. But knowledge requires there to be a mental realm, a realm of spirit, a realm of mind that you can't explain if you're a naturalist. So I think you're absolutely right about this.
Okay, the other aspect of what you were talking about is this kind of rank determinism. I mean, if the sun came together by mere forces acting upon mere matter, and at some point, the furnace is lit, and then all the other things in the universe begin to occur as well. I mean, this is a very simplified form. I should, if I'm a sophisticated enough mathematician, be able to tell you where everything ought to be at any given moment. It's entirely deterministic, and I wonder if the naturalist is consistent in driving that determinism, that radical determinism, all the way through to us, what we do, what we say, what we think, and our lives.
It's pretty hard to be consistent with it, isn't it? Because, you see, as you pointed out, if everything is matter like you just described, then everything's behavior, or at least the chances of its behavior, are fixed by prior states of the universe. Because everything in this entire system called the universe is governed in its behavior by natural law. And natural law completely determines or fixes the probabilities of what's going to happen next. And so there is no free agency. And with the loss of free agency goes the loss of reason. Because, you know, when we reason through a problem, like if people are listening to us right now and trying to reason about what we're saying, then you deliberate. You kind of weigh the evidence and you ponder it. Well, the act of deliberating about what we're talking about or deliberating about what's the best thing for me to do during Thanksgiving Day, an act of deliberating assumes that it's up to me, ultimately, to decide what I'm going to do based upon the best reasons.
Let's take a break right there. I want to pick up on the other side of the break. We're talking with Dr. J.P. Moreland, Distinguished Professor of Philosophy at Talbot School of Theology at Biola University in La Mirada, California. He's author of the new book titled The Recalcitrant Image of God, Human Persons and the Failure of Naturalism. You can purchase it under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Look for The Recalcitrant Image of God, The Recalcitrant Imago Dei, by our guest, Dr. J.P. Moreland. And we'll give away a copy of this book to caller number 12 during this break, 1-877-623-MYIE. Caller number 12 gets a copy of Dr. J.P. Moreland's new book, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. We're talking about naturalism. Stay tuned.
Dust in the wind. All we are is dust in the wind.
Oh. Here's a special offer for Issues Etc. listeners. For any size gift between now and the end of the year, we'll send you a CD of an Advent and Christmas sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can donate online at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. And for any size year-end gift, we'll send you a CD of Todd's Advent and Christmas sermons.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio.
Treadmill for the mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is proposing sweeping changes in structure and governance. These changes would further centralize power in the church's bureaucracy and decrease the voice of LCMS congregations and laity. Stay informed. Read the new broadcast transcripts on this subject. You'll find them at the top of the on-demand page at issuesetc.org. These transcripts are a must-read for every layperson and pastor in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. issuesetc.org. Click on demand.
So what's the fad du jour at your church? Beth Moore, Rick Warren, post-emergent, pre-emergent, or some other move of the Spirit that hasn't quite hit you yet? At the Brothers of John the Steadfast, we're kicking it old school. And by old school, I mean the 1580 Book of Concord. Check out our website for a list of confessional study groups, or if you have one at your congregation, you can let us know. www.steadfastlutherans.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about the failure of naturalism as a worldview. Dr. J.P. Moreland is our guest. Before the break, Dr. Moreland, you had already pointed out that in the naturalist worldview, consciousness has got to go. There's no explanation for it. Knowledge has got to go. They can't explain that either in any real sense. Will, is out the window as well. There's no explanation for it. What else must go if someone's going to think consistently like a naturalist?
Well, the single biggest thing that's gone in the university, believe it or not, is the self. It is widely believed now in the university that there is no self or no I or no ego, and that human beings are literally just a conglomeration of atoms and molecules called their brains. And there is no owner to the brain, or there's no unified single I or self. And so psychology, for example, which used to be the study of the soul or the self, is no longer about that. It's the study of behavior, and it's the study of different areas of the brain that cause your behavior to in this way or that way. And so what we have is a disappearance of the self or of the ego. And the reason is because if you start with matter and you rearrange it, then you're going to get what are called aggregates or collections of parts. And you and I will turn out not to be a single simple subject or self, but we will just be an aggregate of parts called our brains. But our brain is a collection, an aggregate. It's a conglomeration of myriads of molecules and atoms. But you and I aren't collections. You are a single self or I, and you can't explain how you can get a single self by just rearranging parts into some kind of a heap or an aggregate, and that's a problem for the naturalist.
You propose in your book that the concept that ought to be set in contrast to the kind of this sheer nihilism, I think what it ends up being is sheer materialism,
right.
Nihilism. The concept that needs to be set against it in a Christian worldview is the image of God. How do we explain that?
Well, here, you know, what if God is really real? And what if we are actually made in his image? Then you would think, wouldn't you, that we would be like God? And in fact, wouldn't we predict that there would be things about us that reflect the very nature of God himself, and that any worldview that didn't begin with God would have trouble accounting for us? And I am suggesting that God has at least five things true of him. First, he's conscious. He has free choice. He has reason. He is a self. In fact, as the Trinity, there are three selves in the Godhead. He has the capacity to engage in reason, and he has value. God is a being of incredible personal value and worth. And all of these things are true of us. We haven't mentioned the matter of human rights, but you see, without the image of God, it's very difficult to explain where human beings get their value, and it certainly is difficult to explain why we should have equal value, because we're not equal. There are some of us that are athletic and some aren't, and some are socially useful and some are socially useless. Some are better able to achieve their life aims. Other people aren't good at achieving their life aims. They're more kind of indecisive and so on. We have absolutely nothing in common that's equal that matters if it isn't the image of God. Now, the Christian says that we have the image of God. Indeed, Martin Luther King, in all of his civil rights activity, grounded the equal rights of all human beings and the fact that we did literally have something in common, and that was the image of God. But if that goes by the board, Todd, and so that there is no God, much less an image of God, then there becomes no basis for equal human rights because we don't have anything in common that matters, because we have wide differences of ability and merit and so on. So I'm suggesting that if we're made in the image of God, there should be things about us, consciousness, free will, the ability to reason, the fact that we have a self and that we have great, incredibly high equal value, and that we would predict that if you start with matter like the naturalist does, he would not be able to explain these features about us, and indeed the naturalist cannot explain them.
So two final questions.
Yes.
If naturalism fails this way, why is it still tottering around? Why hasn't it fallen already under its own flimsy weight?
Well, people have this idea that science supports naturalism, but it really doesn't, because science doesn't make any statement about worldview. Science doesn't tell us that there is no spirit or soul or consciousness or free will. What tells us that is the view that says science is all there is. But that is not itself a statement of science. The claim that science is all there is not itself a statement of physics or chemistry or science. And so it isn't science that implies naturalism. It's philosophical naturalism that implies naturalism. And a lot of people are confused on this because they think that science supports naturalism, whereas science is indifferent to that question. So I'm a strong advocate of science, and I'm a full-blown Christian theist. It isn't science that supports that worldview. It's the claim that science is all there is. And like I said, that is not itself a scientific assertion.
Tomorrow, people will be gathering together as families, and
yes,
all these worldviews are going to come around one table. I mean, in most families, it's going to be there. Could be a naturalist or two sitting around the turkey. You're sitting there. I'm sitting there at this Thanksgiving meal. My academically minded cousin, brother, grandson, who has become a naturalist, begins to espouse these views about we're just collections of atoms and neurons firing randomly, and that's what we really are.
Yes, that's right.
What questions do I need to ask him? What do I need to tell him?
Yeah, I'd say, hey, can you get consciousness from matter? How can you get free will from matter that isn't free? How can you get reason from matter that doesn't follow the rules of reason? How can you get value from matter which doesn't have value in and of itself? I would just try to ask questions to say, how do you get persons who are free and conscious and have value and so on from little particles of matter that don't have any of this in them? How do you get something from nothing? That would be what I'd like to ask. And in my book, The Recalcitrant Imago Dei, that's the whole point of what I'm trying to press on our culture.
Finally, do you think that naturalism will eventually collapse under its own weight? About a minute.
Yes, I do. I think that naturalism is, we're already seeing signs of it collapsing, and I think we're going to be facing forms of relativism in its wake, but I think it'll be an opportunity for us as Christians to really seize the vacuum that will be left.
Dr. J.P. Moreland is Distinguished Professor of Philosophy at Talbot School of Theology at Biola University in La Mirada, California. He's author of the new book titled The Recalcitrant Imago Dei, Human Persons and the Failure of Naturalism. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Todd, great to be with you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to study the praise hymn, Alleluia, Sing to Jesus. Pastor Will Whedon will be our guest apropos of Thanksgiving Day. Then Friday, we're going to review Bill Hybels' book, Just Walk Across the Room. It says it's about evangelism. We'll see whether or not his evangelism has anything to do with the evangel, that is, the gospel itself. Pastor Stephen Parks will help us with that review Friday on Issues Etc. Now notice, if you will, how broad and how sweeping the Christian worldview is. Not just the Christian worldview, but the Christian religion. It's theology. It not only explains what is, and explains it very nicely, thank you, it also makes further assertions. Not just about this world and what it's made up of and its creator. It brings together those things that we would call physical matter, and those things we might refer to as metaphysical, or perhaps non-physical, spiritual, those things that cannot necessarily be measured under a microscope or viewed through a telescope. It brings them together. It explains both of these aspects of the reality that God has created for us. And it does more than that. It does more than simply explain what is. It says that what is, according to our fallen nature, isn't what should be. That the image of God that God gave us in our creation, we lost, we forfeited, we shattered by our sin and our rebellion. And rather than trying to explain away that terrible condition, the Christian religion teaches us that this creator did more than just create. He intervened. He took on human flesh. The metaphysical and the physical together, God become man to really truly redeem this creation in a very earthy, tangible, bloody way, his death on the cross. Now, that explains a lot, but it does more than explain. It proclaims who this creator the one from whom all of this came, really is. For apart from that sacrificial death of his son Jesus Christ, we cannot claim to truly know this Creator. Even though we may bear his shattered image, we cannot claim to know him. But Christ has come the true image of God in human flesh, God and man together. And by his death on the cross, has redeemed this creation and us along with it, and he has restored to us, by his death and resurrection, that image that we forfeited and lost. And he has given us true knowledge of who our Creator is. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.